With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show. Good to have you with us, gang. Week two of the NFL coming your way. And our friend Tom Deacon, comedian, presenter, all-pro member of the crew, dropping by to talk about his beloved 49ers. He's got to be happy with their start, surely. And we're going to preview not only their game against the Eagles, but some of the other big matchups coming up this weekend, including what promises to be a tantalizing Sunday Night Football. Ravens, Chiefs, Jackson, Mahomes. We'll talk Cowboys. We'll talk Chargers, Patriots. We'll talk Dolphins. We'll get into as much as we can over the course of the next 60 minutes to get you set for the weekend. So let's get straight down to business and welcome the brilliant Tom Deacon. Tom Deacon, welcome back to the show. It's good to see you, man. How's life?
Life is anything but easy right now. New puppy dad. That's what people are hearing right now. Can you hear it in my voice? Sleepless nights. Yeah.
Oh boy. This is amazing. Breaking news, though, because we hadn't had this conversation before we stopped recording. I had no idea that you had a new member of the Deacon household. And this fits perfectly into something that is getting a lot of momentum on our show this season. You will, of course, remember Mike Carlson's legendary Rufus the Dog, who often makes his opinions known when the New York Jets are being discussed. Well, last week, Matilda the Cat, my 17-year-old cat, made her debut on the show on Edge Rush, and we're going to be hearing from her on this week's Edge Rush as well. She's going to be doing Matilda's pick of the week on Edge Rush. your puppy is named
I won't do the long story because no one cares, but basically
we care.
Do you look, being a new dog owner is essentially I have to talk to people I've never met in my life before and have to engage in long conversations about the dog, the type of dog, how big will the dog grow, because she's a puppy. And basically she's a cross, she's a bit of a mix, and she's got a South Korean Jindo tail, so we named her Kimchi, which means I won't dwell on that for any longer. It's a lovely little fermented cabbage cuisine. But her nickname is KC. So I feel like she's going to be a Chiefs fan by that. But then the dog pound. I mean, you know, surely a Browns.
It's very leaning Browns. That's a good point. The Chiefs make a lot of sense, which will create, of course, even more friction that in your house that's already existing, because you, as our listeners will know, longtime friend of the show, big 49ers fan.
Yeah.
But the other half,
I know. She had a choice, Nat. You know, she came into my world. I brought NFL to her world, and obviously me being a bit of a legend as well. But she got a better trade-off, to be fair. And then I said to her, you could choose any team. And she chose the Philly Eagles. So behind me, for those that can see, I've got the Eagles, Carson Wentz top up there, because the Eagles go head-to-head with the Niners. And she feels very sad for Carson Wentz not getting a Super Bowl, really, because Nick Foles, well, he's now got a statue, hasn't he? So
Rocco.
Whoa.
Mickey, cut me. Did he utter those lines during the Super Bowl to Frank Wright? Cut me, Frank.
I think he did when he said, pass me the ball. I'll show you how it's done. Give me the touchdown. So the household is going to be very weird with a Chiefs fan. But as you asked, I'm very
Eagles
well.
Fan.
I'm
looking with an Eagles fan. Are we now anointing Kimchi as a Chiefs fan as well?
I'm going to say Kimchi's a Chiefs fan. It just makes it easier on WhatsApp to message just KC, two initials. But it's good, man. It's great. You know, the season's back. Now I've got a dog. I'm happy with the start. The Life Niners haven't lost yet. Undefeated. Life's good.
Well, let's get into that, because of course, it's going to be interesting Sunday night in the Deacon household, right? Because it's a head-to-head square-off. And I think, just as a side note, we'll say, if we do develop this Matilda the Cat, Rufus the Dog spin-off show, like College Days, like Edge Rush, there's a lot of talk that we might be doing that, rolling it out. I like KC involved in some way, maybe as a roving reporter, maybe an update from Chiefs camp, that kind of thing. So if you have a word with her, we can talk to her agent if you want.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, I mean, what she does have is huge ears, like the German Shepherds that the Eagles had. Remember, you know, when they were the underdogs in their Super Bowl run. So she looks identical to that. To be fair, she's kind of my girlfriend's dog, really. But yeah, I'll have a word with her agent and we'll definitely work something out.
It's a good gig. She's going to sell the Chiefs report to her. We'll work that out. Let's get down to business. Tom Deacon, let's start by looking back actually at what in the hell happened to the 49ers. There's Kimchi on camera now there we go. If you're listening to the show as a pod, good to have you along, of course, but you can check out video from the show on our social channels at the NC Show, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so pick your poison. Haven't made it to TikTok yet, but Ollie the producer working on that, of course, because he is he's a suitable demographic for at age for that. So follow us on social channels for video and you maybe get a flash of Kimchi there, Kechi there, making her show debut. But I want to go back as we preview 49ers Eagles, Tom, to last week and the craziness of the last quarter. The 49ers 28 points up at one stage in that game, and they almost blew it. And this was remarkable because the Lions rallied hard, and I know Detroit fans will take a fair amount of comfort from that, because let's not forget the Lions fans were booing their own team within the first half of the first game of the season, which is sensational in its own right. But the Lions won the fans back round. What went on? Did the 49ers get cocky, get complacent? We heard a lot about, in particular, the issues on the ground, and Shanahan talking about the lack of gap integrity and the way the Lions were just busting up the middle like anybody's business. So what do you put it down to, the remarkable comeback that almost was?
Yeah, I think it's interesting when Nick Bosa was even saying at one point, I took my tape off and everything. I was expecting it to be done. That's the attitude the Niners had at 38-10 at the start of the fourth quarter. It was remarkable for a neutral fan. I'm sure it was fantastic to watch. Dan Campbell, the man, is he all just bravado? Is he all just words? He's got to put it into actions. And I think that's what the Detroit Lions fans were annoyed about in the first half. Like, oh, same old Lions, here we go. Yeah. But yet they rallied. The Niners have a great way of making Jared Goff look good. And he did until that pick six from Greenlaw. Mm. But yeah, I feel like for the Niners, there was a few injuries on the cornerbacks. We lost Jason Verrett, lost him to the season. Raheem Mostert, lost him, but it's next man up in the running back, so that's fine. Elijah Mitchell.
Let's talk about him, because Mostert's out there saying, I think, in half the season. And already, you mentioned Elijah Mitchell. I want to get your perspective on him. It led me to the San Francisco Chronicle, right? As I was getting ready for this week, writing various things, getting the shows ready. I was looking, and no, you were on, right? No, we're going to leave off for the 49ers. Looking at the San Francisco Chronicle. I don't know if you read much of the Chronicle, Tom Deacon. It's an interesting title, right? So the first article I found referred to Elijah Mitchell as a bargain bin back. I get their point, but I thought it was kind of a little bit, you know, Elijah Mitchell's going to be on cloud nine after what's happened to him. And then, you know, puts on his tablet and, hey, son, they're writing about you in the Chronicle.
Oh, what did they say? Did they say something nice?
It's not interesting. It's not important what it was. So there was that. And then there's a writer called Scott Osler. Now, I get, you know, reading his stuff, I get his shtick that he's obviously quite acerbic and quite and taking it a certain direction. But his opening gambit was, why does the 49ers 1-0 record feel more like 0-3? It's like, my God, you've won the first game of the season already.
Yeah.
Saying his point was that the collapse was lame and the fact that there are injury issues all around the franchise. And then he proceeded to list all the different transactions that the organization has done the last couple of years with dodgy injury crocs they've brought in. So it seems to be quite a negative vibe from the Chronicle.
Yeah, but as a Niners fan, I do feel it. I think it wasn't an implosion. It was just an observation. I guess they put on show for everybody that their mind games can go against the Niners. Yes, they're great on offense, and Jimmy G and Lance, and defensively with that front line with Dee Ford and Nick Bosa back, we're great. But if you hit them in the mouth hard enough, as Dan Campbell talks about, you can rattle any team. And I think that's what we saw for Elijah Mitchell. Yeah, a sixth round pick, the first running back from the third round onwards to get 100 yards in their debut in week one. That's never happened before. He's got mouths to feed. He tweeted about and put out there. He's got kids. He needs to make sure he's good. And it's interesting why Trey Sherman didn't line up and suit up and get ready to play. But that's the beauty of the Niners. They seem to find bargain bin running backs here, there, and everywhere. And Elijah Mitchell is the next guy to step up and deliver with Shanahan's system. But yeah, do I see it as a loss? No, I thought it were lights out to begin with. That we just need to work on the fourth quarter. That's what we need to do.
That was the point number one of the Monday morning meeting. Okay, guys,
it's a fourth quarter game. All right. But I don't think I saw any perfect team in week one. And not just as a Niner fan, I would say this of any team. I'd say, look, there's a lot of things to work on. If you're perfect now, you're not peaking at the right time. If you're perfect now, no good. I'm sure we'll talk about the other NFC West teams, Seahawks. Mm. They're a team that I love to see doing so well to begin with and then plateau and fall off a little bit. But Niners...
it's the hype that kills you, right?
Yeah. But the Niners, I think things are looking good. Okay. Brandon Ayuk didn't even really make it to the field much because Trent Sherfield took his place. But they look good. Deebo Samuel looks great. Elijah Mitchell, who's not even our number one or number two running back, looks fantastic. There's a lot of optimism. Don't read the Chronicle, Elijah Mitchell. And anybody else who wants to say that we're 0-3, you're wrong. It's 1-0, guys.
Was more like 0-3. It's the most negative thing I've ever heard.
And Nat, you mentioned, sorry, just to make a point about the Niners, you're talking about crocked players that we seem to take. Emmanuel Mosley's had a knee injury. He's limited practice at the moment. Javon Kinlaw, who any Colts fans out there will remember, we traded DeForest Buckner to the Colts, and he's fantastic. So we thought that Javon Kinlaw in the draft was going to replace him. That hasn't quite happened. And now we're taking another. Kerryon Johnson is actually from the Lions formerly, who's come to the practice squad, who has a dodgy knee injury. So if you have a dodgy knee injury, call up the Niners. They will rehabilitate you to full strength. It's a fact.
I love it. I love that. Trent Sherfield, incidentally, sounds like a character from a mid-80s frat house comedy. The baddie, he'd be the baddie.
Yeah, or Columbo. Just one more question, Sherfield.
I love dropping our two very on-point pop culture references for our younger audience there. Actually, mind you, Columbo gets rebooted on ITV whatever all the time, right? So I'm sure it's got fans from... I have to ask Ollie, our producer, if he's ever seen Columbo, because... Never seen The Wire, famously, of course, despite the fact his nickname on.
What?
I know, Tom. He still hasn't. We've been ribbing him about it for ages, and he still hasn't chosen to watch it, even though his nickname, of course, on our Edge Rush show is Prop-O, after the great Prop Joe. But no, that goes straight over his head, as do all our Wire references. I wonder if he's seen Columbo. We'll have to find that out on Edge Rush. I'll ask him.
Well, we can do the shout-out, the Wire shout-out. When any team goes 5-0, we can typical style of the Wire, 5-0, 5-0. So maybe we could do that for those ones. But
I love it. We'll record that. We'll clip that up. And when we get to week five, at least, we will drop that for you. So let's look at the Eagles matchup in particular, right? Because you've got the point that Shanahan made about a lack of bite in the middle of the line and stats underpinning this. The Lions rushed for 88 yards on 17 carries. This is in the first half when things weren't going particularly to plan, averaging over 5 yards per carry. And Shanahan pointed out they got 60-something yards, is what he said, on 3 of the same play, which were very similar, which are all up the gut. So they're obviously going to try and fix that as much as they can. But difficult against this Eagles side, who can run on teams, not least their new quarterback, Jalen Hurts, not prolific in the air by any stretch. He averaged 3.7 air yards per attempt last week, which was bottom of the pile in terms of with week one quarterbacks, but he can mix it up on the ground. And they've got, of course, a decent ground game around him. So is that what you think the Eagles will try and focus on? More of the same and try and repeat the trick that the Lions pulled off?
Yeah. If you don't have a lot of tape to watch on teams, then yeah, do what the last team did and do it better. I think I think this one's going to be a high scoring game. That's how I see it. Niners great on offense. Jimmy G, Trey Lance, that combo works perfectly. What a dynamic duo they are. What Jimmy G can't do, Trey Lance will do a little bit better, and vice versa. But
how do you feel about that combo? What's your, you know, as a 49ers fan, because Jimmy G played, apart from the first snap of the season, Jimmy G played pretty well. You know, he was on point. He's a solid player, but we all know the book on him is he's not dynamic. He doesn't have that X factor that potentially Trey Lance seems to have. And in this era of the NFL, what have you done for me lately? It feels like it's easy and quick to move on from a player like Jimmy. It's happening. It's not, obviously not the same in Chicago, but nobody wants Dalton. Everybody wants Justin Fields. It happened to, a lesser degree in New England, but now Mac Jones looks the part. The Patriots have, you know, it wasn't even a contest that Cam Newton was going to start the season. Why would we even think that, right? What about the 49ers? What would you like to see happen with the quarterback position as the season rolls on?
It's not broke, so we don't need to fix it right now. In the preseason games, it looked electric having Trey Lance come on to take a snap, come off. Jimmy G goes back in. There's a great tactic with that you can be giving the play before it happens. So there's when Jimmy G comes back in, he can tell the offensive line, this is what we're doing. So there's benefits to it. But for me, Jimmy G has a ceiling. And Trey Lance isn't ready to take over from Jimmy G. So no matter what you do at the moment, it's actually just add them together to give you that hopefully burst through the ceiling. But at the same time, we saw what happened with Aaron Rodgers last season when Green Bay didn't select a wide receiver in the draft. And he looked pretty angry about that and played incredibly last year. Let's not talk about week one for him this season. Let's not discuss that. But Jimmy G is playing better than he did at various points last year before he got injured. So actually it's raised his game. So when that imbalance happens, when Trey Lance starts saying, I want to look, when I'm 100, I'm 100%, I throw the football, we get a touchdown. That's a fact at the moment.
Can't argue with it.
So, but there will come a point where he wants to take over. But look at what happens with Patrick Mahomes. You leave him for pretty much a whole season and he learns off Alex Smith.
Right.
So for me, as a Niners fan, keep Jimmy G in there. You can't muck around with the salary cap now. He's a very expensive quarterback, is Jimmy G. So you can't make any trades mid-season to help that or to really... You know, when you look at the salary cap and you think, hey, let's make a big splash next year, that's too late now. Stick with Jimmy G, bring on Trey Lance, get him up to speed, and then when we really, really do need him, he'll be able to step in.
Jimmy G as well, we were chatting about this with our friend Greg Rosenthal the other week on the show, and you could deep dive back into the archive if you missed any of our preseason and early season shows. They're all sitting there, Carlson, Greg Rosenthal, all the big guns. And Greg, we were discussing just how chill Jimmy G looks. He just looks so, he's not fazed by any of this. Like other quarterback, like Mitch Trubisky would be, you know, his nails bitten down.
Yeah, turn the TV off. I don't want to see anything bad about me. That was...
Mitch just got me.
Yet Jimmy G is, oh, I mean, what a gorgeous smile. I mean, let's just take a moment to reflect.
He's a handsome man, Jimmy G. He's a handsome man.
And he looks confident. Last year, he looked a little bit rattled before he got injured. And that was the problem with the Niners overall, inconsistency. We had Nick Mullins come in, CJ Beathard. You know, Jimmy G wasn't on the field for a lot of time. He was injury prone. But now he's rattled, got a gorgeous smile. He looks confident. He looks like, you know, this is going to be the season where we start rolling. That defense now has to step up. And against the Eagles, with all of their weapons and what they offer, I think it's going to be a very, very spicy game.
Yeah, I wonder if they're going to develop the Eagles that, you know, obviously they got Devontae Smith, Jalen Reagor, decent tight ends. I mean, I wonder if they're going to flex that, and with the injuries that you've got in the secondary, whether that's something that they will. All this overreaction in week one. Jalen Hurts can't throw the ball. Look, he only averaged 3 points that he did in that game. Let's see what he's capable of. He's been playing for 10 minutes in the NFL. It's the same thing with Tua. Everybody's just ridiculously jumping to, this is my definitive conclusion on this player that has played for 6 games.
It's week one. I mean, when you did ask me at the beginning of this show, hey, Tom, how are you feeling? I'm feeling awful. My fantasy league was terrible, absolutely terrible. But I will say we begin to understand by week three, if you're not making the trades and on waiver wire that you need, then you've got something to worry about.
Are you talking about our inaugural dynasty league? How did you get on in that?
I did get in on that.
How did you get on though, week one?
Well, it's not important. What is important is I have made some acquisitions ready for the rest of the season. I was drafting while I was doing a stand-up gig. It was brilliant. I even told the audience, I said, listen, guys, I've got 1 minute till I'm on the clock. Who am I going for?
Did they help pick for you?
No, they weren't interested, but I was very interested. For me,
sounds like a great gig.
When I wasn't on the clock, I was like Jimmy G. The smiles were flowing. I think with the Eagles, they can run the football against the Niners, and I think with Devontae Smith, who oddly enough, I didn't know this, Nat, scored the touchdown in exactly the same spot. He scored the game-winning touchdown in the national championship, but he won't be playing there again. So that's the only hope that Niners have. I think if Jalen Hurts throws the football, the Niners have got some problems, but it's going to be a high scoring game this one.
Oh, I'm writing that down because we'll talk about that on Edge Rush, because we need all the help we can get, frankly, on that show. So high scoring game, says Tom Deacon. High scoring game with the right result for you, the 49ers win.
I think when I watched back against the Falcons had enough opportunities. They stopped the Eagles at times, but just didn't take advantage of it. And I think that's the problem. You need to be complementary, your offense and defense. And I think the Niners, I think, will hold up with someone like Nick Bosa and Dee Ford chasing down Jalen Hurts. I think there is a chance the Niners will just do enough. And then when you're running the football, you're taking time off the clock, control the football. And at the end of the day, it's only week one. I've got no idea, but my fingers are crossed for the Niners to get this win.
I'm really fascinated to see if the Niners win and improve to 2-0, but it's not a comprehensive or clear-cut victory. What the hell Scott Oster's going to be writing in the Chronicle? It's
0-6.
Yeah, at least. All right, Sunday Night Football. Fair to call it, I think, the game of the weekend, with respect, of course, to your 49ers and their matchup against the Eagles. Ravens, Chiefs, two of the most exhilarating quarterbacks in the game going head-to-head. Lamar's never beaten Mahomes, of course. 0-3, his career record against his counterpart. And the Chiefs have won the last four straight against Baltimore. And it's a difficult situation for the Ravens, because the way they lost to the Raiders was... I mean, that was an extraordinary game, but the manner in which they lost, where they were in control of it, in control of their own destiny, kept essentially throwing it away. And of course, Lamar in particular with two costly fumbles, not least the strip sack at the end, Carl Nassib's strip sack that ultimately proved to be the decisive factor. And I was thinking, watching it back, writing about it afterwards, Tom, the fact it was in Vegas as well, the way the Ravens lost that game reminded me of, you're on the blackjack table and you're storming it and you walk away from the table with your chips. You think, you know, I'm quitting while I'm ahead. What a night. And as you're walking to the cashier, you see the roulette wheel and you think, oh, and you maybe had one too many, and you put it, you just blow it all on the way to the cashier. You're just standing there walking on the sidewalk in a blur. Not that this is a story from personal experience, of course. minutes later, and it's just the way that the Ravens lost that game to the Ravens. They must have just been the equivalent of that guy on the sidewalk thinking, what the hell just happened? Where are all my chips?
Yeah, keeps checking every pocket. They were in here. They were in here. Right. You can still feel that. A personal experience of doubling down. Yeah, look, black will come in next on the roulette table. It has to. Let's double it up. I tell you what, the Raiders did a fantastic job of just basically saying never die. We will not go out of this. And a fantastic kick from Carlson as well to tie the game. Lamar Jackson 0-3 against Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah,
unfortunately, when he should run, he sometimes passes. When he should pass, he sometimes runs. But that's why he's very exciting to watch. But I don't think Lamar Jackson is the reason why the Ravens didn't win against the Raiders. The Raiders played very well. That's my take from it. Other people might have a different opinion, but they didn't do enough. They didn't hold on to that lead and get that win when they really needed to, like you say.
You look at the injuries that, you know, 49ers obviously been massively unlucky with injuries, you know, in the past, but the Ravens and the season, by the sound of it, but the Ravens going into this season with J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards out, Marcus Peters as well in the secondary. And that's not the situation you want to be in when you're facing the Chiefs. Tyson Williams came in and he looked pretty good on debut. He had 65 on the ground. a touchdown. Had some catches out of the backfield as well. They've brought in both Devontae Freeman and Le'Veon Bell, so we might see a bit of a running back by committee against the Chiefs. What do you make of Lamar? Did you watch much of that? Because he didn't have Rashad Bateman, their number one pick. So, and he was, of course, has been brought in the same way that other young quarterbacks have been given a number one receiver. And that's a lot of pressure on, of course, a rookie's shoulders. But that very much was one of the things the Ravens looked at doing in the offseason, which to strengthen the core, strengthen the weapons around him. You can't overtly criticize his passing game as being, if not lackluster or inefficient, then at the same standards as some of his counterparts like Mahomes, if he doesn't have the weapons that Mahomes has around him, right? But we haven't seen Rashad Bateman yet. So it's difficult to judge, but based on what you saw, some electrifying runs from Lamar as usual, carving the Raiders up at times. And he was throwing some zingers as well.
But yeah, sidearms, the cheeky sidearms. You're spot on. I mean, the Ravens did enough to get points on the board. Sammy Watkins had a great night, 8 targets, 4 catches for 96 yards, and he got that touchdown. So, it's a next man up principle. If only the Ravens had everybody on the field, I think they would have probably got that win most likely. But Miles Boykin's not there either. I mean, there's a lot of players out and they're finding out how to play at the moment. And unfortunately, they did just enough to win, thought they had. And then we're like, oh, hang on a minute. This isn't going to plan. This isn't going to the script. What do we do here? So I think next game that they come back again against the Chiefs, which isn't an easy one to go back to, they're going to get stronger. It's just not panic, not hitting that panic mode like every San Francisco Chronicle right now. Do not hit the panic button. They've got enough weapons and talent and, they just need to gel at the moment. And it just didn't happen quite as it should have done against the Raiders. Also, Nat, they have all the rookies stepping up, like Brandon Stevens, Dalen Hayes, a linebacker, fifth round. They've got a lot of rookies that they're relying on basically at the moment, which is they'll either get better or they'll get worse. Is that kind of,
it's that fearless. Yeah. I mean, that is interesting. How quickly rookies can hit the ground running. And of course it's quite an expansive thing to assess, right? Depends on significantly on position, but going into last season, that was a big narrative, wasn't it? Oh, it's going to be a really long old season for the rookies. There's no preseason. They haven't integrated properly. And guess what? Rookies had, by and large, across the board, a sensational season. So, yeah, that maybe that is part of the change we're seeing in the game now. The receivers, in particular, able to acclimatize almost immediately in the NFL, given the way offenses have changed, which wasn't happening 10, 15 years ago, certainly. Quarterbacks, of course, as well, to a large degree, or different styles of quarterbacks being able to do that quickly. So it is interesting to see whether those teams, the Cowboys I'm thinking of in particular, the injury issues they've got defensively, the number of young players they've got on that side of the ball, whether they're going to crash and burn defensively or actually will surprise a lot of people despite their inexperience. We shall see. So where are you on the Chiefs quickly? Quick take on them early doors, because they've obviously re-upped their offensive line in particular after getting turned over by the Bucs D in the Super Bowl. Based on what you've seen so far, do you feel that has been strong enough, what they've done, the moves that they've made?
It's debatable. I mean, there's a Super Bowl team that got there, didn't quite get across the line against the Bucs because the Bucs were so good. All I hear in the background at the moment is KC losing the plot when I'm talking about the Chiefs. That's the Chiefs. Exactly. That's what I was about to knock them. I won't, KC. Good. She's fine now.
It's settled. She's a Chiefs fan. That moment has settled it, Dom.
For me, the Chiefs definitely need to shore up the line. When it comes to defending against the run, they let 153 yards and 4 touchdowns against the Browns. That's 5.5 yards per carry for Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb. And what do the Ravens do? They run the football. In terms of the Chiefs, they're just so dominant in offense, with Mahomes making the right decisions, Kelsey, and then Tyreek Hill, 197 yards. I mean, if the Ravens had a receiver like that, and Mahomes and Lamar Jackson could pass in the same way that Mahomes does rather than sidearm, you know, we'd be talking about the Ravens going to the Super Bowl. But for me, the Chiefs are just incredibly strong, and I think they've got enough to get back there.
Okay, let's talk Cowboys Chargers next, because I mentioned the Cowboys banged up a bit. DeMarcus Lawrence, the latest injury, he's missing, well, they're saying 6 to 8 weeks, a broken foot, which is never good. That is a big loss for them. They could be without Randy Gregory as well, another pass rusher who, because of COVID protocol, which we're going to see repeatedly, I'm sure, this season, taking out players all through the year. Michael Gallup's on IR as well. Lael Collins has been suspended for 5 games. He violated the substance abuse policy, the NFL substance abuse policy. So they are short stacked, I think it's fair to say, and not a great place to be going when you're short stacked, because the Chargers are looking good once again. Focus will be on Dak and Justin Herbert, two of the most impressive young quarterbacks in the league. Great to see Dak back. And this offense, even without Gallup and Lael Collins, and therefore a weakened line, they can ball, Tom. So yeah, we're expecting almost every game Dallas to rack up the points, whatever happens on the other side. But it is concerning. And I looked at this, I picked the Cowboys before I got a full grasp of just how many big names they were missing. Which way are you leaning on this? Do you think it is going to be, given the injuries and the home field advantage, this is going to be Chargers to lose? Or do you think the Cowboys might surprise a few people here?
After watching against the Bucks, I think the Bucks are a more dominant team than the Chargers are on paper. Or as every week, you know, will they actually deliver? It is interesting. For me, the Cowboys looked really good. Dak, what injury. And I think apart from Zeke Elliott, we know how good he is. It wasn't a great week for him. So he'll step up. He'll come on.
Do you think he will? I mean, what point do we start getting concerned about? Because last year, the big asterisk, of course, was, well, the team was pretty terrible. Didn't have the starting quarterback. Had a banged up line. They were behind in games a lot, you know, so therefore they were trying to pass their way out of it with DiNucci and Dalton and Zeke just had a bad year, had a bad time. So we chalk that up to, all right, let's go. Everything's back. Everyone's back. Dak's back. Let me see that performance. So at what point do Cowboys fans start to get worried that this isn't just a transient thing? This is a he's gone situation.
For anybody who watched Hard Knocks with the Dallas Cowboys, if Zeke Elliott is asked to wrap you a Christmas present or any birthday present, then you really do have to be concerned, because that is not going to be fully wrapped. Very bougie case he bought your main man Dak Prescott. It was delightful. However, I feel
he
like
buy it that, or did the agent buy it? Was that the
or the team? Or the production team that we're filming. I reckon because it's a very expensive case. That didn't look like it would get everything that Dak Prescott would need in. You know,
I remember at One England tournament back in the day, one of the videos released, I think by England on England's own YouTube channel, was Gary Cahill talking us through what's in his wash bag, which was surprisingly really, really compelling. I want to know what Dak has in his Zeke present.
Yeah, in that bougie case. What are you taking? I mean, because I saw a few players taking their PS5s and everything on the plane to fly away. What is in that case, what's needed? But I don't know what is in it, but I know that he played incredibly well against the Bucks, and I think he's going to do exactly the same against the Chargers. But for me, Zeke Elliott, how much does a running back who's had that much, those many snaps and those many hits that you take when you're grounding and pounding, then for me, I don't know. Is he regressing? I'd like to think he's not. I think in that Bucks game, he had to protect Dak as much as he possibly could against that pass rush. But then sometimes he would fly out to the flat and you would think, Dak, just pass to Zeke. He's ready. He could just churn out some yards. And that's the thing. When you've got the likes of Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb, you know you can just air it out. And that's going to affect Zeke Elliott. Tony Pollard looked better at times. I think, again, talk to everybody after week three when we see we can start saying, oh, well, actually, Zeke is being used more in that ground game. It was never going to happen against the Bucks, but against the Chargers, I feel like he'll come back to form because I don't think you want to take on Derwin James for the Chargers as much when you look at the Bucks corners.
It's a great point. And with on the other side of the ball, the Chargers line against this Dallas team that's lacking a bit of bite, particularly with the rush, especially if Randy Gregory doesn't start, right? So looking back at week one and that Chargers offensive line is pretty decent in terms of protecting Herbert, right? They were only, where's the number here? 52 dropbacks. Herbert was only under pressure on 6 of those 52. And when he's got a clean pocket, he was outstanding. All right. He ranks 6th amongst all quarterbacks in the NFL in terms of his passing grade from a clean pocket, courtesy of PFF, that data, those numbers. So Herbert picked up from where he left off. And that is a concern for me for the Cowboys. I'm not sure they're going to be able to put him under much duress. And I think if you've got Justin Herbert playing the way he's playing without much pressure, he could carve you up.
Yeah, when you break it down, everything you've said about the Cowboys, the injury, Zach Martin comes back in, but defensively, that front seven, let's not forget, they did get 2 takeaways from the Bucks. They did get 2 turnovers, but they didn't do anything with it. So that went against them. But yeah, if you can't put pressure, they didn't get any sacks in that game. We're talking about Chase Young for the Washington football team. We're talking about Montez Sweat. If they couldn't quite get enough pressure, I don't see where it's going to come from in the Cowboys. So therefore, you're just going to have to air it out. It's another big scoring game here. Who gives up first? Who doesn't connect on a pass and gives the ball back to the opposition? I think that's the game we're looking at here.
Which way are you leaning?
If I had to lean, I mean, also a shout out to Rashawn Slater from the draft. I mean, I think he's allowed no pressures in that game. That's the first time anyone, a debut since 2011. Mm. Incredible. He's going to protect Herbert. The Cowboys aren't going to get to him. But I just love the way Dak was playing. These are 2 offensive rookies of the year previously, Dak and Justin Herbert. I would lean on America's team. Let's go with America's team. Cowboys. And you know what? It'll come down to something like some amazing play on special teams. Shout out to John Fossil, who I absolutely
love. Fossil.
Love Fossil. He took over the Rams at one point.
Do you remember that in All or Nothing? Yeah. I love that. My favorite episodes of All or Nothing. And the players love Fossil as well.
Yeah, he's incredible. So I think
Fossil.
I think
Fossil. If you call him Fossil.
I'm going to call him Fossil because he's been around for a long time. But good old Fossil. Thanks, Nat. They didn't win in the preseason at all. Mike McCarthy's there. I feel like the Cowboys are just gonna find a way to win, and I look on paper and I don't know how they're gonna do it. Maybe Blake Jarwin, Dalton Schultz will step up for the Cowboys. I'm gonna go Cowboys, and I know that the Chargers are gonna win now as soon as I said it.
It's a lock, Tom Deacon's a lock. You mentioned Mike McCarthy, and of course it got me, how remiss of us, 40 or so minutes into your first appearance on the show this season, we haven't referenced Mick McCarthy. And what would Mick do in this situation against the Chargers?
Well, Mick McCarthy, listen, let them have the yards. Mick McCarthy says, don't bother with the defensive line. Don't try and tackle them. No, we're not doing it. We're just going to let them run with the ball and we'll have it back and we'll have it for longer. Wind down the clock. Mick McCarthy has spoken.
We'll have it for longer. That's it. It would be, how good would it be if at halftime, and it's a real nail biter, and Mick McCarthy is just parachuted into that Cowboys locker room and delivers that speech and walks out. And just the look on the Cowboys' faces would be incredible. I would love to see that. All right, let's talk. Let's go to Titans Seahawks next. This is an intriguing one, of course, because Seahawks up and running and looking. The offense in particular, Shane Waldron's new offense, looking pretty tidy. Thank you very much. The Titans, one of the worst performances of recent memory for them. How much do we read into that, do you think? That the Titans were bad on both sides of the ball, frankly, but particularly the offense was horrendous and everything was unraveling. You had, after the game, Mike Vrabel, who I'm a big fan of, one of my favorite coaches in the league. And I think he, not just strategically how he manages things, but how he carries himself, how he handles himself. So I looked at this really interestingly. I was very interested when I saw this, and Ollie, our producer, was flagging it and saying we should talk about it on the show. Vrabel calling out Julio. Mm. And if you didn't see it, because there's so much as well that gets flies around and you miss things, you suddenly pick up, I didn't know that happened in that game. And Julio got called for a personal foul, which was turned out to be quite a significant and costly personal foul for the time. So it wouldn't have, I don't think, affected the result, the way they were playing. But it was nevertheless an issue. And Vrabel called him out afterwards. And he called it dumb shit that hurts the team in bold letters. That was his quote. And that seems to have divided opinion. Some people saying Vrabel was out of order for doing that. Other people saying, well, no, that's what he should be doing. And Vrabel himself said, I wouldn't say anything in a presser to the media that I wouldn't say directly to a player. Where are you on Vrabel calling out Julio?
I mean, I got more popcorn and I started eating and I just loved it. I lapped that up. To be honest with you, I think there's merit in from being a neutral fan and saying, yeah, a coach should call out a player when they do something wrong. If it's justified, if it did really cost the game, because the players are accountable. You know, we're talking about Julio Jones, the vet, the experienced player who needs, I guess there's something more to it. You've got to be accountable. That's what they talk about in the NFL all the time. I think there's something else that's happened, maybe in practice, in training, where Julio Jones hasn't bothered or not put as much effort in and is resting on his laurels because the name's there. It's Julio Jones. You know, I'm incredible. You know, nothing gets said about me that's negative.
He's known as quite a down-to-earth player, not a flashy receiver, is he? And that, because somebody was making the point, and I think very accurately, that he was put on a pedestal in Atlanta and probably never had to deal with that kind of thing. And I wonder whether Vrabel deliberately, you could read a lot into this. He committed a personal foul. It was a stupid mistake or stupid decision, and it cost him. So it's fair to call that. But I wonder whether Vrabel is doing it to show that he's not, you know, no one player is bigger than the team. And that's obviously very much the culture he engenders there. Vrabel is somebody that, when the Titans came over, and again, apologies for telling this story for the 58,000th time to some of your old school listeners, but long story short, Vrabel, I did an interview with him and a number of the leaders on the team, and you could tell, and it was his first year, I think, as a head coach, you could tell straight away the respect they had. He had that really good balance of a young head coach that could connect with them in certain ways that, and not exclusively the older head coaches can't. I remember talking to OC and Jay Bell about this with someone like Tom Coughlin, that, you know, obviously much older than they were, but they still had a strong connection. I'm not suggesting that older coaches can't connect, but there is, I think, an ex-pro younger coach dynamic with some of the older veterans when there's maybe, like, you know, 8 years, 6 years difference in some cases in age, right? That there was clearly this connection that was the right side of that balance. You know, it wasn't a case of, well, he's one of the boys and he doesn't carry authority. So I don't think he's throwing the smackdown on Julio to try and establish authority. And we've seen lots of head coaches do that, right? Kind of go into a locker room. Patricia did this in Detroit with disastrous results, where he's going to call out, call out Slay, I think it was, and, you know, just call out some of the leaders, and everyone's turning around like, what are you doing? I don't think it was that.
But I feel like the psychology of it is no one's devoid of criticism after a game, and that's particularly right. Julio Jones to say, look, everyone's accountable. Everyone, from the special teams to the offense to the defense to the coaches, we're all accountable. That was some dumb that he pulled there. You can't be doing that. So I think what it sends is a message. It's really about how does Julio take this? And I haven't seen anything to say how he's responded. And this is Julio Jones, who pretty much forced his way out of the Falcons. I mean, look, we've all done things that maybe we'd say, I said it in the wrong way. I didn't do it quite right. Vrabel's called him out. He's one of the star players. Everyone needs to lift their game because that performance was poor, like really poor. And you go for the star to say, look, we're all accountable. No one's safe in this team. And now it's how it responds. I mean, and in this week, if the Titans bounce back and beat the Seahawks, who I think are going to win this game, that will be a bit of a surprise for everybody. And everyone will be like, Vrabel did the best thing ever there. And then it begs the question, did Vrabel want Julio Jones? You know, all of these little subtexts and all the things underneath the fabric, did he really want him? Is he digging him out because he wants him out of there? He doesn't think he's right for the team. You're talking about, you know, Vrabel, the Patriots way, you know, you're accountable, you step up. So I like Julio Jones. I like Vrabel. I think he said what he had to say. Now let's see the proof in the pudding if it does actually work.
It would not surprise me at all here, despite what you look at on paper here and quite a few mismatches around on both sides, I guess. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the Titans rack up a lot of points against Seattle. I'm a supporter of the Seattle D in the sense that I think it's better than a lot of people suggest. I think it's only getting stronger. But if Henry went for 140, Julio two touchdowns, they hardly used the play action. I thought was really interesting. You know, week one, which of course is the staple, one of the staples of this, the success of this offense for Tennessee. I can see the Titans offense rallying. The question is, can the defense handle what's going on with Seattle? Particularly, I suppose the key to this will be whether they can break through that line, because Russ was sacked three times again. And I know everyone hypes up how many times has Wilson been sacked over all these years. And that's getting better, progressive. The line's getting better. Looking at data from sort of 4 or 5 years ago, it's kind of irrelevant, right? But yeah, if they can get to Russ, and that's a big if, because I'm not sure they've got the players to do it, Tennessee, at the moment defensively. But if they can, I think it could be really interesting. If they can't, I still think the offense will score points, but I think Seattle takes this.
Yeah, on paper, I look at this, the Seahawks flying in terms of Lockett and Metcalf. Wilson, this will be his 100th career win if he gets it in the NFL, which is an incredible stat. You know, 10 years he's been in the game. Only Peyton Manning's had that many wins in those 10 years. So Wilson's on fire. They look great. But when you look at the Titans last week, against the Cardinals, they did not run the football successfully enough. They are built on the run. They had a fumble that Tannehill got sacked early doors, lost that football. I just think they were like rabbits in the headlights. You've got a new defensive coach in. You got Shane Bowen has that title now, and then Arthur Smith's gone to the Falcons. They didn't look great, to be honest, on offense in the game. And then Todd Downing steps up, and you kind of got a Titans team that are learning how to win at the moment. So I kind of agree with you. I think that they can, you know, step up offensively. Is Bud Dupree going to do enough defensively to stop the Seahawks? And I don't see it. So therefore, for me, it's a Seahawks win. As much as that, did I sound like I was gritted teeth there for the NFC?
A little bit.
Okay, they will. And oddly enough, I didn't mention it earlier that I think NFC West is going to be undefeated by the end of week two. I think they get that. But
big call. Seahawks, Dupree's questionable, by the way. We're recording this on Thursday. He sat out of practice yesterday. So that is a great point that you make. Where if Dupree starts, I think that does give them, you know, potentially, certainly it gives them that more of that edge. Great point you make about the coordinators. I don't think enough people are making this point. That change early on, of course, there's going to be, even if you're retaining a lot of the personnel, a lot of the same system, inevitably you're not going to retain a lot of there's going to be enough change on both sides of the ball as well. But just the acclimatization for those two in the NFL stepping up. It's a big call for it all to be gelling on week one. And the Titans, we've seen before defensively last year, they were suspect, and there were games where they were just blitzed and blown away. And that is, I think, an important note of caution here. So I can see him bouncing back in a better performance, but I think the Seahawks take this. And I think that Titans are in 0-2 land as well. Tom, let's talk Bills Dolphins next. Big AFC East clash. Huge game for the Bills, of course. They were another team, much like the Titans, not as stunningly, that nevertheless had a below par performance by their standards. How much should we be concerned about what we saw from Buffalo last week, do you think?
I think we should be massively concerned, Nat. You weren't expecting that response. Brilliant. Week one's out the window. The Bills are done. That's it.
They're not making the playoffs. It's the end of the road. They've overpaid Josh Allen. McDermott's on the hot seat.
Yeah, basically, they've paid Josh Allen. He's sitting back on all that cash in his bank account. He's moved into cryptocurrency. He's now trading on that. He doesn't have any time to throw the ball. He's not interested. He's actually gone back into the world of eBay. He's buying teeny beanie babies and trying to sell those on the stocks and shares.
I think I saw one of those in Dak Prescott's swag bag that that's one of the things he's got in there.
One of the big ones, which was basically that's a special occasion for a child to, if it's a Christmas and a birthday present size. Look, I think Josh Allen looked like he'd regressed back to the 2019 Josh Allen, not the Josh Allen we saw last year. They just couldn't seem to get the football out there to Stephon Diggs. The run game, what run game? So they've got a lot to work on. But again, you're talking about the Steelers. They don't muck about. When they hit you, they really hit you hard. And with the likes of Watt there in that team, I don't think the Bills were expecting that to be hit so hard by the Steelers and then just couldn't rally. But again, like every team from week one, they'll see, oh, we are not quite good enough. We really need to work on this. And then Sean McDermott will get them playing a lot better.
It's going to be tight. I mean, much like the Finns game against New England was, I really liked Jaylen Waddle, which, as expected, gives an X factor to this offense that wasn't there last season, certainly. And that's with respect to, obviously, Devontae Parker. And I'm a big Team Kasicki fan, but Jaylen Waddle adds that dimension, which elevates them to the next level, no doubt about that. And Tua, another, I felt, solid step forward. He's not going to progress at the rate of Justin Herbert and some of his other contemporaries. It's just not that, it doesn't appear at the moment to be that kind of trajectory, but it we've talked about it a lot on the show. We referenced it a little bit earlier on this particular show. Let's just give him half a season, at least half of this season, on top of what he put in last year before we start to form any conclusions. At the moment, I think Tua is progressing solidly, and this sense that he's, because he's not lights out good, that he's somehow a bust is nonsense.
I would never call him a bust. What
some
I would say,
and the Dolphins are looking over their shoulder all the time at who else is out there, which whatever they're testing is worrying. I think
if you're a real NFL fan, you understand that players get a season, maybe two seasons, and then that's it. You get, you know, dropped down to the bench. But with Tua, I don't think he's had a long enough opportunity to really set his mark, have all the players. He's got weapons now. Like you pointed out with Jaylen Waddle, like you've got stars there that can deliver. For me personally, it comes down to the scheme, and the scheme is beautifully put together by Brian Flores. And he's like my favorite coach other than Kyle Shanahan. I absolutely love him. Although I do notice the stat line that says he's 0-4 against the Bills. And the last time they played was the Bills 56, Dolphins 26. You know, not a great result, but I'm very impressed with how Brian Flores is protecting Tua, allowing him that time to develop. And like you say, you don't need to make decisions just yet, because those weapons will still be there for any other quarterback that needs to step into Tua's shoes. But so far, look, they just beat the Patriots. That doesn't happen often. Let's enjoy this, Dolphins fans, and see how it rides out. But the Bills are going to be a bigger challenge for Tua. And it's like they say about Andy Dalton. He's a 2020 quarterback. He throws it for no more than 20 yards and keeps moving down the field. The difference with Justin Herbert, and like we saw with Stafford, they can zing it when they really need to zing it. Mm. And that's the difference. And I think that's the only thing that we're not quite seeing from Tua just yet, with that accuracy. But if you're getting wins, who cares?
I'm really interested to see the Bills' offensive game plan in this game, because you mentioned the running back core, and that was identified, understandably, is the big weakness coming to the season. Devin Singletary averaged 6.5 a carry last week, which was decent enough. But if we're talking about X factor, they don't appear to have that. I can't work out whether we're falling into the trap with the Bills and Singletary in particular that we mentioned earlier on, people are doing all across the league with quarterbacks that give up on them too quickly. And we forget that they heighten optimism around a player that quickly gets diminished after half a season or an injury or whatever. And of course, an injury can create a situation where a player is never the same. Todd Gurley, I guess, is the most notable recent example in that position, right? Of a player who's just was never the same when he came back from that injury. But I don't think there is necessarily the cause for negativity around the Bills' ground game of Devin Singletary. If he was to progressively step up week on week on week, and, you know, be middle of the pack, 16th to 20th in terms of productivity, that will suit the Bills fine, because Allen can add everything he can add you know, on both sides of the ball, on the ground game and in the air. So really interested to see whether they lean on the run a little bit more, whether they, how much they air it out and how much they let Allen run as well. So looking forward to that game for obvious personal reasons too. Quick pick for from you on the Raiders Steelers. Who's going to take that and why?
Just to answer the Bills Dolphins, Matt Breida goes back to the Dolphins, so I'm going to say the 4 carries, 4 yards. He'll be tearing it up, like you just said, Nat. It's all about complementing all the pieces you have. I see the Bills getting the win, but you asked me about those Raiders versus the Steelers. Even though I love the Raiders and Derek Carr almost getting emotional in a post-match interview, almost crying with his team.
Emotional kind of cat, isn't he, Derek Carr? I like Derek.
I love him. He said, my career's been up and down. It's been up and down like a roller coaster. But we got there. We did it. Just a finger point. He's a finger point guy.
He likes a point, doesn't he? Yeah.
And I really like him. And I think fair play to the Raiders, even though John Gruden, he's not the captain of a ship that I want. He's going to be all over. We could have got there in a direct route, but we haven't. That's John Gruden. Who are you picking in the draft that you're just going to let go and a wasted pick? John Gruden. I don't like the organization. I don't see where they're going. But
What should you make of the game in Vegas? You know, a lot of people were wondering, is the black hole going to be there and what kind of fans are going to rock up and you're going to get stag nights and everything else? I mean, I do like the fact that Vegas has a team. I know not everybody does, but I do like the fact you can go and watch NFL in Vegas.
I think I want the, you know, like on the stadium, when you look at it and you've got the fans that sometimes the players jump up to and celebrate with. Mm. I want them all sort of black, red, black, red, black, red, black, red in their outfit and then just one green at the end. That's what I want. I think that would be beautiful. I think it would be great. But I tell you what, I just watched the documentary on Darren Waller and wow. Do you know what? You immediately get like this guy, he's had it all, lost it at times, come back. Love him as a player. I think he's a fantastic guy. I still don't see them beating the Steelers. No chance. That defense is just strong enough to take them all the way to a playoff game easily. And I think Najee Harris will have a running on those Raiders. So I think we'll see the potential that everyone drafted him early in Fantasy League come out on that game. So Steelers for me.
I love the fact the Steelers were so slagged off last year, the worst 11-0 team in the history of the NFL. Nobody was buying them. Now there's one win. The defense is balling, admittedly, and it's everybody loves the Steelers. It is a crazy game that we love. Great to see you, bud. Really, really good to catch up. Great to hear from Casey as well. I appreciate her input into the show.
I can only apologize. Now, through the last 2 years, everyone was like, sorry about my dog, sorry about my cat. And I was like, oh, so annoying. And now I'm that guy. So I can only apologize.
On this show, we are very, very pro some animal interaction. Indeed, when we drop Edge Rush, which will be later on this week, keep your ears peeled, which just isn't a phrase, Tom.
Don't peel ears. Don't peel them.
Matilda the cat will have her pick on Edge Rush. Ollie and I will be going through stuff on Edge Rush as well to get your edge set for the weekend. Tom, what's new for you? What's latest for you? Gigging again, as you mentioned earlier, on the road stand-up?
Stand-up comedy is back to varying degrees of people coming out, but comedy is happening. Still waiting for that live at the Apollo call-up. All my peers keep going on before me, but I'm happy for them. I'm saying through gritted teeth. The comedy's back. And also the return of the F1 esports. It's now pro championship. So that's all starting in October. So there could be a new champ. And that's on, on YouTube and a lot of fun. So yeah, busy, but hoping the fantasy league gets better for a particular league I'm in called Show Me Your Touchdowns. And I was poor. I was brought in as the expert and, it's
tough start. You had a tight start. You'll bounce back. Very heavy start this week. I can feel it. Look after yourself, bud. Come and see us soon.
You too, guys. Thank you.
Brilliant stuff from Tom. He will be back very soon. You can count on that. So will we. Edge Rush dropping Saturday morning. The Edge Rush Fix. Me and Propo getting into some of our favorite angles from this weekend's action. So if that's your thing, make sure you check out Edge Rush. We will have a College Days dropping next week. I promise that isn't a promise, a signed and sealed, locked and loaded promise that Ben Isaacs will be dropping by with College Days. I am Mike back on Monday as well for our review show. We have got episodes rolling thick and fast. So if you haven't already, subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast. Many thanks to everybody who's picked us up on on whichever pod platform you listen to us on. We really appreciate that. The reviews helps us out, helps us with sponsors, love all that good stuff. And it puts a big smile on Propo's face as well. So what is not to love about that? And at the NC Show on social, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, lots of good stuff rolling through the week. Lots of videos from the shows as well. So if you want to put faces to names, and we'll put some bonus and extra stuff out there as well, then that is where you follow us. Thanks to everybody on those channels for your interaction and support of the show. We massively appreciate that. Right, back for Edgeworth Saturday. I'm Mike Monday. We'll see you then. Bye for now.
Fellow baseball nuts, join us on the Johnny and Josh Show with my baseball brothers, where JC will
endeavor to offer some insightful analysis, and my friend Eric Jansen will
offer quirky baseball trivia. But we also have David Langell, who will
combine a high level of inappropriateness with a low level of analysis.
The Johnny and Josh Show, available to download wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Sports Social Podcast Network.